Hi there. Today's interview has come about in a roundabout way. I'd kind of sworn off doing interviews pretty much altogether. I was getting a bit tired of the stories behind success format, and so I wanted to try some different approaches. And then it just got all a bit too hard, and I thought, no, I'm just going to do free flow convos from here on in. But there were stories that I still wanted to be telling. And this is one of those. I want to be producing a podcast that really makes you think about your status quo, about the status quo. And this is one of those conversations. So my guest today is a Carlosophies listener who emailed me a few months ago and asked to meet up for lunch. And I said, sure. And I sat down with her, and she just had this incredible story about growing up in Israel and moving out to Australia to work at a really large corporate. And I had these questions going around in my head about purpose and living a life with meaning. And was that a universal concept? Is that something that people who grow up without this level of freedom that we're accustomed to in Australia, are those people seeking purpose and meaning? Or is this a white privileged thing? The funny thing is, while speaking to this incredible woman, she had said to me, I just don't know what's in this for other people. It's just a boring story of my life. But it's so much more than that. And it isn't to wrap up a story in a neat little bow. It's to really start unraveling your own stories. That's what I want to be doing here, unraveling your own stories. So without further ado, here is the first of hopefully what will be many. It may not be every fortnight, but of conversations I feel really called to have. I have some really incredible guests lined up who are living life outside of the status quo. People who have inspired a question in me, a curiosity that I then feel called to investigate further. So it may not be happening on as regular basis as it was previously, week off, week on, week off. But it will still be happening. I will still be bringing you these conversations, but I will not be bringing them to you out of obligation. I'll be bringing them to you out of pure curiosity when I feel called. So here is the first of my questions. Is purpose and meaning a universal concept, or is it a byproduct of freedom? Enjoy. Welcome to Carlosophies. I'm Carly Nimmo, and to be honest, I'm still figuring out this thing called life. This podcast has been a training ground for me to learn to show up and speak up. It's grown and changed as I've grown and changed. And these days, I want to explore what happens when you let the lid off. When you stop living a life of expectation and start living a life in brilliant technicolor. Each week, I'll show up and peel back another layer of the stories that make up the fabric of who I am. And occasionally, I'll dive deep with a guest into a topic that's piqued my curiosity. So show up and allow Carlosophies to speak to you in any way you need it to.
In the Soviet Union, this is where I was born. I was born to a Jewish family, a small Jewish family. When I was 5 or 6, there was a huge exposure in Ukraine of nuclear explosion. It was known all over the world. It's called the Chernobyl explosion. And what basically happened is that most of the kids in my I was born in Kiev, which is like a huge city, were basically exported outside of the city. So I left my family and my home, and my sister was sent to one grandmother and I was sent to another grandmother. And we've been there, I don't know, she asked me, like, how long have you been there? I'm like, I don't know. It could have been a year. It could have been 3 months. To me, it was the same. I don't remember. I think it was around 6 months. I haven't seen my parents during that time at all, during the period of 6 months. And no one knew when we would be allowed to come back, because no one knew actually. Like, so then we came back, and I sort of started school, and things became normal. And then when I was nine, my parents decided, because Jews were started to be being persecuted in the country, my parents decided that they're going to flee. They're going to, you know, move away, as the government decided to open the gates or whatever that means. And part of my family applied for like a U.S. visa, and we applied as well. But my grandmother on my mom's side didn't sign the authorization letter. So basically, your parents need to authorize you to leave the country. Ridiculous. But she didn't authorize.
And even as an adult?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
Even when you're like 80, if your parents are alive, they need to sign off your leaving the country, which is ridiculous, right? So my grandmother then didn't sign off. And because as soon as you leave the country, you may never see them again in your life, because the gates or the communist gates will be closed. And then she could not like see her daughter forever and ever. And she said, no, I'm not saying you're going to stay here. I'm not signing your release. And basically my parents missed the train they missed the visas for the Americas. And when my grandmother was eventually willing for us to leave, because things are getting shitty, it was too late. So my parents then left to Israel. Though my dad claims it's the home of the Judaism and he wanted to go there, that's bullshit. He basically missed the train for the Americas. It was like the third try, I think, because my parents tried to leave before we were born. After they were married, they tried to leave, and my grandmother once again didn't sign the form. So then we all left to Israel, and the fleet was like the way to get there. You can't really catch the direct train. We need to catch the train to Europe, and through Europe we were basically exported back to the country. So I left everything that I knew when I was nine, then I came to Israel when I was 10, which it was a really Eastern country, and we were like, you know, Western European people sort of. So, and there were like a million of us that came to, like, the entire country was like 4 million people, and then another million just landed on their land. Yeah. And said, we are the educated European people, and you're like whatever. And the absorption of the immigrants in the country was pretty awful, especially that specific wave, because it was like huge amounts of people coming every day on these huge planes. And obviously, we were not told to live in certain areas, but the population will be centralized in certain areas, because they didn't want, you know, the immigrants in Manhattan of the country, not that we had in Manhattan. But we were like centralized in some sort of like suburban areas in order to spread. Like, you know, the flats were pretty cheap. So basically, we were living in this shitty area.
Yeah.
Shitty schools. We were also like a very substantially like wealthy family in Ukraine, and all the money needed to stay in the country. So you're not allowed to take anything but your clothes. So basically we became like pretty poor overnight. And when we came, like 3 weeks later, a war started, which in Israel is not very uncommon, because you sort of get used to these waves of escalation. And then like 3 weeks later, like this huge Gulf War, basically, if you remember. You probably don't be in Australia.
Yeah, like in the early 90s?
Yes, the 90s. Exactly. Yeah. The Gulf War was, and the Americans were basically bombing Iran and Iraq, and Iran and Iraq were bombing us. That was like the, and it came through actual like plane bombs. So basically we need to like wear like these huge masks and stuff, like gas masks. So my mom, who was a wealthy woman of a Jewish man in Ukraine, now came to this shithole where she needed to like basically sleep in the kitchen and then wear a gas mask. And she was like, what the fuck did you do? Like, how the hell
did you do it?
And obviously you don't have anywhere to go back to, because the passports were like, they take your citizenships as soon as you leave, basically. So my mom, my dad, my sister, and me were like living this, you know, in this like
Did you have any concept of what was happening, or was it just like,
oh, I was 10.
Yeah.
Like, I was not a baby. I was 10.
Yeah.
I understood what have happened, but like the war, I was not bothered by that at all. I was more bothered by the fact that I went to this shitty school with these shitty people who like didn't get me. And I was like, I was pretty big. Like, I was extremely tall. Like, I was the same height I am now back then, and I was 10. I had boobs, and I looked like the teachers rather than like the kids in this, you know, suburban, small, hot country, because hormones, I don't know. I got my period when I was 10. I don't know. It's just like I was very, very different from the rest. I literally looked like my teacher on, like, if you look at school pictures, I was like all the girls were like tiny, skinny, like. And yes, I was more bothered by the fact that when the war will be over, I will need to go back to school rather than by the bombing itself. Like, I didn't feel like my life was threatening by like the fact. And we lived across this huge like chemical factory. And I think that if a bomb would be landing there, it would be like pretty bad. But I just didn't think about that. But yeah, I acknowledged the fact that what was happening, and you could literally hear like the bombing and stuff.
It's like, it's just completely, I read Mabel, that book Rebel Girls, which is the series with, and, there's a couple there where, you know, where there's girls in war-torn countries growing up with bombs going around them. And Mabel said to me, what's a bomb? You know, and it's like just such a protected life here, it's as opposed different. To, what, like, there's no way for us to fully understand what that's like, because for you, living that life, it would have maybe not been normal, but when you've grown up in that, it kind of becomes your normal.
It does become normal, and that's the ridiculous thing about it. When I also, like, had a full army service that I've done, and I was combat trained as well. So what happens is that this escalation was over, but then smaller escalations will be there. And it's sort of like a normal thing when you hear a siren, you just step out of your car, just lay on the ground, cover your head. It's like, and you know, like, and you only thing you are bugged about is like, oh shit, I just like, I'm on my way to work and my clothes will be dirty if I lay on the ground. So maybe you're not even bothered to lay on the ground. You just like go to shelter.
Wow.
And every flat, every new building that is being built in the country must have like a safe room with like this huge, like, you know, metal window. And by the way, it has been proven that if a missile hits the building, these rooms remain. Like, they just stand there, like the entire building can collapse, but the room will remain. Having a flat without that room will be a bit odd. Like, you know, and then basically like you'll see like, one time I rented this new flat with my husband, who was not my husband back then, but we had this living room, and this basically our bedroom was this, you know, the safe room. And it was so annoying to me because it was such an ugly room. It has like this, you know, like this huge window that you need to close in order to, like, you know, and you can, and you have this huge door as well, because it sounds like a normal door. It's like a bomb shelter door. And then you move to an older building, like in the center of the country. Like, I have a flat, which is like the same price as a Sydney flat, but it's like an extremely old building. It doesn't have a safe room. In order to, I'll give you an example. My last year in Israel, yet another escalation happened. I lived in the center of the country, like in Tel Aviv. I obviously paid a huge amount of money for my rent. I was living in an old apartment building, and in order to, when the sirens will go off, what you needed to do, because you don't have a safe room, you need to go to an internal zone of the building. So if a missile hits you, that, you know, some walls will collapse, but the internal walls will remain the same. So you need to like take your kids and step out into this, you know, basically onto the stairways where you're with all your neighbors. And I was pregnant with Guy, and with Roman, it's like, wake her up, take her to the stairways and just stand there. And something that was like the eventually like the break point for me, not the fact that I worked like a very big job and paid a huge amount of taxes and had like shitty like support for education and stuff. What broke me was that one time I was like, I think, you know, with little babies, like they barely sleep, and you're like extremely sleep deprived, and you want to like kill yourself. Mm. like, he was asleep. It was like 11 a.m. or something. And I was like still wearing my stinky pajamas. I was like, I'm going to shower now. I don't give a shit. I'm just going to shower. And I was showering. And the damn thing went off. And I was thinking to myself, fuck it, I'm not going anywhere, I'm just going to shower. But then I remembered that I left him in the living room near the huge windows. So if something will happen, even if minor, and the window will like crack, it will fall in the room. And he was like right in the room. So I was like, oh shit, and you have like literally 8 seconds to evacuate, because if something will fall within the next 10 seconds. So I was like naked, post-pregnancy naked, wrapped in my fucking towel, and the baby just fallen asleep. I pick him up. Of course he wakes up and starts screaming because he's extremely annoyed. And then I'm like, okay, nobody's home right now. I can go into the staircase. Like, everyone is in the office. In my head, everyone is in the office because I would be in the office at this time. I go there fucking naked with the screaming baby on me and all my neighbors stepping outside. I'm like, what all these people are doing home? And I'm like naked, like in my towel, freezing, obviously. And then I'm thinking to myself, if somebody's on the floor below me, I'm not wearing anything. And I was like, oh my God, I'm naked with my, and I was like just standing in the corner and with my kid screaming, obviously. After 5 seconds, I'm like, fuck it, I'm just going in, because if nothing exploded by then, it'll be fine by then. And then he was screaming, I was naked, unshowered. That was one incident. The other incident was I left him with my sister, I think, because my daughter, who was extremely annoyed by him, obviously, wanted to go to see a movie. And I took her to see this movie. And on the way to the movies, Simon went off. And I needed to basically step away from the car and lie on top of her, thinking that my ass will protect her head if a missile will fall on us. And at this point, I decided that I am not doing this any longer. And I decided that I'm leaving the country. That night, I think my husband came home and I said to him, we are going to Australia. And as soon as I can land a job there, we'll go. And when we came here, I think that the most like significant shift that you would see is the first thing that you would do when you come back from the office is to turn on the news. Because there is always something on the news. Either something is being exploding somewhere in the country, even if it's not in Tel Aviv, or somebody is being slaughtered by someone on political, you know, background, or a prime minister is stealing money again. And something will always be on the news, and you're sort of like hooked on the news, and every hour you'll see the news, and every hour you'll explore the news, and you will watch the news, you will read the news, and you're like... And here, I still remember the day we landed after like 3 hours on a flight, and we came to this Airbnb and we put on the news. And I remember that day where they were reporting about a crocodile who did escape the zoo. And Alex was like, what's that? And I'm like, I think it's the news. And he's like, no, put on the news. And he's like, I'm like, dude, I think it's their news. He's like, oh, that's bullshit. Like, we turn on the news. The next morning, we put on the news. They're still reporting on the crocodile. And he's like, is it the same crocodile? And I'm like, I think it is. And then I said to him, maybe we shouldn't judge. Maybe it's a big thing here that the crocodile has escaped the zoo. Maybe the crocodile will attack someone at some point. And then they found the crocodile, apparently, and some baseball trainer or like the cricket trainer or someone's trainer like quit the training squad, and they just left the team in the middle of the season or something. And then they were reporting on that like for 3 days. And so it's, we didn't get it. At some point, we just stopped watching it. So we just like stopped watching the news. And since that day, we don't have a TV. Like, we don't own the TV because we couldn't, like, we didn't watch the news anymore. And the kids would, like, my guy was a baby, so he didn't need it. And Rome was streaming YouTube anyways. So since that day, we basically, we moved to our own house, obviously. We don't own a TV. We have this huge screen when kids streamline like Netflix, whatever.
Yeah.
But yeah, we didn't have news in our lives anymore since we moved to Australia. Like, no news, no like corruption. Like, and I'm sure that Australia has their own thing, but we weren't impressed by the urgency of the crocodile or like, you know, and yeah, so this is how we got to Australia basically.
Wow. So with on the work front, like what was your story of work? So I wonder if things are very different in the, you know, in the kind of lifestyle you were living and the kind of circumstances that you were in, was there even the thing that you follow your dreams and you know, like what was the kind of conditioning that you received around work?
So it's very simple. Israel is a very, very small country. It's very competitive. Because you have a very small amount of good jobs and many people to apply for those jobs. And when I was a teenager living in this shithole of a town with parents who didn't speak the language and didn't aspire to anything but to survive, I made a very clear and conscious decision that I will try to go to the best school and try to get the best university in order to sort of get myself out of here, basically. I have applied and was accepted to a very prestigious private school in my area. And only when I was accepted there, I found out that I need to pay for the school. So in my mind, it was like an amazing school that I need to apply to. Like I remember like I took the forms, no online back then. I went to the school, took the forms, I filled them out myself. I signed on behalf of my parents. Was accepted, and then they said like it's a private school, and I'm like, what the hell does that mean? They said like you need to pay X amount of money, and I'm like, my mom is a cleaner, she can't pay that amount of money. So I did apply for a scholarship, and I got the scholarship, and this is how I went to that school. I lost the scholarship midway because I couldn't keep up with the academic stuff, so I need to then pay myself through school. But I did manage to finish it barely, and got a scholarship to uni. This is how I got. And I was pretty competitive, I think, due to the school, because I was competing with very rich people who had a lot of money to tutor and stuff like that. So at my end of my master's degree, which was in organizational sociology, I needed to do a research and a, sort of an applied work firm, like factory. I needed to basically do an OD project. Organizational development project in a firm. And they gave me a carton box factory. So basically it was a factory that made carton boxes.
Oh, right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So thinking to myself, like, how the hell am I going to make any money if I'll go to work with like for a carton box factory in the kibbutz or whatever? I applied for a few firms that was like IT, large IT firms, and I tried to convince them to sort of hire me for free for like a year. This basically was a project you need to work there for a year for free. And I exhausted one of the firms to death, and they're just like, oh, screw it, just come and we'll see you. So I came there for like a few hours, and this man saw me for an hour. And said, fine, I'll hire you. I'll find something for you to do. And this is how I got there. And after a year, they hired me to do like a generalist role in HR. And I've been there for like 6 or 7 years. And then I took temp role at Google. And since it's very competitive, it's usually very competitive. Like you compete for like with hundreds of people for every single role. And you need to have like at least a master's degree to be qualified, even for like basic gigs. Like here, people that do these roles would usually have like a high school degree. But you know that you need to be like the best of the best to move ahead. Otherwise, like 100 people can take your place. The unis are very competitive. Like you'll have like thousands and thousands of applicants for each degree. So what happens usually, you will have like these unis and then sort of like sub degree colleges. So you'll have, you know, uni graduates and college graduates, and then college graduates will not be qualified for places like Google and stuff. So they'll be qualified for other places, and it's pretty tough. So when I come here and, my daughter gets this, I don't know, when you get these report cards and they will tell you she's in the average. Like she's meeting expectations that are like solid or like, I don't know, whatever the name of it is. I would always like ask myself, like, what the hell does that mean? So the questions that I will ask the teacher, like, where is she? Like, you know, she's where she's supposed to be at her group level. And I'm like, okay. And where exactly is she at the group level? Is she in the bottom percentile? Is it in the high? Like, she accelerates in her age group? And basically, when I ask the questions, I can, in my mind, a girl who learned English 2 years ago cannot be accelerating in spelling and literacy. It just doesn't meet, like, and I also read with her at home. Like, I'm an idiot. Like, I can understand that she's not excelling. And then instead of actually addressing the issue of, like, hey, you know what? She actually needs improvement on the spelling front, because I need to ask a lot of questions before he will actually tell me she's one of the worst spellers in the class. Everyone sort of like needs to meet the average, but then Romy doesn't have this strive for excellence at all in her. And I can't really blame her, because why should she?
Yeah, I mean, yours has been there due to survival, really.
Exactly. And for her, it's like, I'm happy, I spell and I read and I write, and then I go home and I have fun. And for me, I'm like, how the hell are you going to get into a selective school if you're not like really investing in your academic stuff? And then I will push her to do more, to whatever, and then she will lose it and get frustrated with me. So at this point, I really figured out that I brought her here to have a pleasant life.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely nothing pleasant of striving for something that you have absolutely no idea what you need to strive there. And as soon as I pulled back on the pressure, on the, you know, the rigor of excellence, she actually became much stronger academically and much happier academically. And now when I go to see the teacher, he will go like, so is she happy? Are you happy? I'm like, yeah, I'm pretty happy. She's happy to come here. She does her work on her own. I don't need to push her. She sucks at spelling. I suck at spelling too, and I have a very successful career, so I'm fine with it. So I think that in Australia, it's very hard. And even my neighbor, who is a TV producer, she has absolutely no formal education in anything. She graduated from school. When I ask her, where did you put her name in for private schools? Like, where is she registered? Like, you know, because I'm Jewish, I can't really do Catholic schools. She's like, she's not registered anywhere. And I'm like, how can that be? Aren't you supposed to register when she's born into this wait list for private schools? So she tells me, look, some people do that. Yeah, I agree with you. You're right to ask me. But I'll be completely honest with you. When I was growing up, my parents didn't have money to send me to uni, so I didn't go. And my parents didn't have money to send me to a private school, so I went to the shittiest public school in Parramatta, because this is where I lived. And I still had a career.
The same level of opportunity, pretty much, as a university-educated person. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, for me, it was like I went to a shitty public school, but then I did get into university and I studied arts. And really, I got a job in sales. Like, I could have gone left school and done that straight away. You know, so it's like unless you're doing something like, say, my brother, who is an associate professor, he needed university education to be doing the actual work that he's doing. Environmental stuff, I guess.
Science.
Yeah, science. Exactly. So he needed university to be able to do that. But for most jobs that will pay really well, you don't actually need the university degree here. You know, you just need enough tenacity to put your hat in the ring.
And out there. And also, some people want to be in construction. And it's okay to be in construction. In Israel, you will never see a Jewish Israeli in construction. They all imported from China because nobody's willing to do like the work. So here people go to do construction and to do arts and to do dance and to do. And basically in Israel, you can't really survive on a teacher's salary. So you'll need to like push yourself higher and to do like to doing even stuff you're kind of suck at, like being an engineer when you're not an engineer and you kind of suck at it and you have to like kind of like power through in order to make the good salary. And that's the culture, I would say. So, yeah, that's very, very, very different from the life that I've led, and very different from when I was quitting my job in my first IT company, a job that I absolutely hated, managers that I despised. I remember that my dad told me, like, what the hell are you doing? You won't have a car and you won't have that steady job. Like, are you sure? Are you sure you're going to be okay? And Carly, I was 31 when I quit that job. 31. Like, what is the worst thing that can happen to me? 31. I will screw it up and they will fire me. And then I will be like 32 and I will be jobless. Like, could I dare and find another job for myself at that age? Yes, I can. But I was so filled with like fears and And when I left my big role in Israel, by the way, I left a really great role. Like, I loved it. And I still think it was the best role I've ever done in my career. And I took a huge compromise in order to come to Australia.
But then also, like, while the job might have been great, the living conditions certainly weren't. You know, if you're having if you're having a shower and you're having to think, holy shit, the alarm's going off, I've got to get out to the lounge room to get my baby in case the window blows in. Like, that's not a great quality of life, right?
And even when things were peaceful, my quality of life were, even though me and my husband have a very successful career, we could have ends meet, but we could not afford a house. We could not afford a house with land. We could not afford like 3 vacations a year. We could not, because the life is so expensive there and everything's so pricey. Like, imagine going to a coffee shop right now and paying $16 for a latte.
Wow.
That would be the same thing. So yeah, it's even when things were peaceful, like life there were not comfortable life. So yeah, I'm not regretting my choice at all. And maybe it was
part of interesting. Like, it is an interesting concept too for me, like, cuz it's completely foreign, but then also I think maybe the basic human need is that we want to be doing something with purpose and meaning in our lives. Do you think that translates? Do you think you feel like maybe you feel now that there's more freedom in your life, that then there's this need to find purpose and meaning? Or do you think that you still had that in Tel Aviv, but, you know, but it came to you through the work that you were doing?
I think it's both. So I think that the lifestyle in Australia, that sort of cultural lifestyle of freedom that people have, which I've never had and first encountered when I arrived here, because I have the freedom of choice, but I also have the freedom of like the lifestyle, because I work on a corporate job, right? But I don't show up at 8 a.m. and leave at 8 p.m. I just don't. Even if I work full time, I just don't. And and I have these long, amazing weekends, and I like just take my car and go anywhere and have rock pools and, you know, whatever. And I own a house after 3 years. If I want to, I can sell that house and buy a house on the beach and just have that lifestyle. It's just, yeah, so that sense of freedom, which was foreign to me, now that we have it, then you want more of it. Like, oh, maybe I don't want a corporate job. Maybe I want to be on the beach every day. And maybe like I want to spend time with my kids. And suddenly when I'm with my daughter in the morning, I'm like, oh, you know what? I'm just going to go later on. I'm just going to help you with your math right now. So yeah, that sense of freedom. And to your question on, I feel that my role in Tel Aviv, like my job in Tel Aviv, I found a lot of meaning in it. I found myself being meaningful in people's lives, and these people are now my friends. These people now, when I travel across the world, want to see me, want to meet me, want to spend time with me due to the value that I brought to their lives in my role.
Do you think that was relative to the level of freedom that you had outside of the work that you were doing?
What do you mean?
So I guess the question is, do you feel like the work that you were doing, you felt a level of freedom and meaning and purpose within that due to the fact that outside of that, there wasn't a huge amount of freedom? Where here in Australia, where you have a huge amount of freedom, maybe there is less meaning and purpose in the work because it's relative? to the amount of freedom outside of that space?
I think it's culturally speaking, back home, you are what you do. Okay? You are what you do. You are your career. Okay? So my husband was a successful software engineer, and I had my role at Google, and this is what I and what I was an HR manager of Google Israel. This is what I was. I was also a mom to two children, but that was relatively a small part of my being. And this is how people find their sort of meaning and their egos there. Like, you are what you do. You are how much money you're making, and you are what kind of car you're driving, and you are how, what kind of flat you're having, what kind of neighbor you're living in, etc. Whether in Australia, you're not what you're doing. And you sometimes, the amount of money that you have. So when I go to Ross Bay in Sydney, I do feel that. But I went to Ross Bay for the first time in my life like 3 weeks ago. So that was the first time that I felt that. In the neighborhood that I live, which is very close to the city, and it's very vibrant, and it's very sort of family-oriented. When I go to school, the non-working moms in my school could not give a shit about my job. And it's nice for them that I work, because I take kids to play dates and they can play at the office and they love it. But other than that, I am not.
Their status isn't determined by what they do.
Exactly. Yeah. Actually, I'm fraud upon because I do not pick my child up for school, and she walks on her own and makes her own sandwiches, and the poor child is being hosted by the other parents at times, so she won't be alone. And by the way, quite normal in my country. So yeah, I'm that person. I'm Romy's mom that works full time. By the way, boohoo, you work full time, crazy woman. And because when I first came here, people were like, so how many days a week do you work? And I'm like, what would you mean? Like, I work 5 days a week. And I only then realized that some people actually work 3 days a week, which considered to be a lot. The normal size of the working week is actually 2 days. But that aside, I was the only one working, so I actually needed to do the 5 days a week. So I'm not what I do.
So here, where you're not defined really by what you do, what do you do?
Somebody asked me, like, what would you do if you had all the money in the world? If money wasn't an issue, what would you do? I said, I would do nothing. Like, I will just like hang out, enjoy life. And then somebody else would say, you know, like, you'll be bored. Like, when I'll be bored, I'll figure it out. But for now, I'm really hopeful to really be able to do the things that I enjoy. I want to be able to do the things I really want to do. Wake up in the morning and to do the things that I really want to do. You know, wake up in the morning to do my meditation yoga class, which I absolutely love to do in the morning. I want to be able to easily, breezily prepare the lunch boxes and take them to school. I want to be able to nap when I want to. And I want to be able to be, like, you know, present in my life rather than, you know, striving for the things. And I'm really hopeful that I will not need to do the things that I don't really feel like doing, but going ahead and doing them anyways because I have to do them.
From my perspective, it is a really interesting, you know, concept, because does purpose become more, I guess, front of mind when you're living in a privileged white country that has a certain level of freedom, or is it a universal concept?
I do believe that it's a universal concept, or at least it should be, because if you see in America, which is also a white privileged country, people struggle with the same things that I've struggled with in Israel. And thus was my reluctance of going there. I really didn't think that I will change my life by going to America. I will be trapped instead of in the bombing scenario in, like, the, you know, the Taylor Swift thing. It will be the same sort of, I would say, slavery same slavery to me. And this modern slavery of corporates, this is how I see it. And these days we have a very big Jewish holiday, Passover, which is again a sort of like simultaneously to the Pascha holidays. And it's the holiday of freedom. Is where, you know, the Israeli people traveled 40 years in desert and then entered into the promised land. And this is our basically holy freedom. And I just didn't see my freedom there. And I remember clearly how my managers and leaders said that I'm making a catastrophic career move by going to Australia. And I knew that I would be making that move, and I still made the choice, and I'm not regretful for that at all. So I think that it's just a different kind of slavery, and I actually think that Australia is unique, but the concept is universal.
Yeah,
people will find purpose in Israel. People have purpose in Israel. People see Israel as the purpose itself at times, right? Many of people do, and leave trillion million dollars houses and move there, or family. You know, family, which is high value, people leave Australia and go back home to live in tiny apartments in bombing cities in order to be closer to their families. The concept is universal, but the way to get there is different. So when you're bombed daily, like in Syria, and you lose thousands of people every day, then the concept of purpose is a bit different. But overall, I think it's universal. To me, it was discovered here because I found true freedom here, potentially because a corporate world is different, potentially because I was completely detached from my family and the bullshit stories that I lived in. And nobody's here like to tell me any stories. It's just sort of mine to create. So that was my path to finding it, or I don't know what's finding. I didn't find anything yet, but.
Yeah, but I think this is the whole thing, right? Like now that you have that level of freedom, you can find out who you are.
Yeah.
And in terms of what that, you know, purpose is in an Australian context, it's about figuring out who you are and then living aligned to the truth of that. And that is a freedom that isn't afforded to everyone.
I agree, and I think that culturally speaking, Israel-America, this is not the question that you're asking yourself. This is not like Brené Brown, I just listened to her.
Braving the Wilderness?
It's 10 tips of, you know, effective lives. Like, I just listened to the one of the things that I'm developing right now. And basically, the question that she asks herself and the world are very, very different. So the fact that, for example, that she says, unless you're in the arena with me getting your ass kicked, I'm not interested in your feedback. So that's a realization. I'm like, whoa, this is so true. Why the hell do I care what these people think? They don't even know the game I'm playing. But this is not a question of, this is not the question you ask yourself. What you ask yourself is, what are all these people going to say about me, when they're going to say this about me, and how significantly would I care what they would say about me? Well, the questions that we are asking ourselves here, at least in the community that I'm following, are different questions. So the quality of the questions, the quality of your life, isn't it? Like Tony Robbins or whomever, I think that's the difference.
In that, looking around externally and basing your life on what you think you need to be doing in order to fit in, it's another form of slavery, really, isn't it? It might not be corporate. It can be instead enslaving yourself to expectation.
Exactly. And you're in there all the time. In the corporate world, you're setting expectations against your performance reviews. In the family world, you're setting expectations against your parents, siblings, expectations, etc. The funny thing is that in my family, I was considered to be like the black sheep in the good way. Like I was always the rebellion. I was always like the one who's doing what I want. I was always the one to question the status quo. I was always the one not to give a shit. But honestly, I was always the one to nail like the fucking shiny corporate job and address all the expectations around me. And even though on the surface I was like question the status quo, I was not really doing so ever in my life. So, you know, and like when I tell my dad, I am updating you, I am not asking you, he'll go, oh, the black sheep of the family. But honestly, I'm just updating him after making the decision based on the expectation. So there's nothing rebellious about me. I'm like as a conformist as it gets, most likely.
Some of the things that we so often, what we are trying to resist so much is the thing that we actually bring into existence. Yeah. Being so afraid of for example, this is a popular kind of one, being so afraid of failure that you take no action. Therefore, failure is exactly what you're experiencing.
Mm-hmm.
And so sometimes we're fighting the status quo so hard that we end up living it.
Yeah, so my food coach, she says, what resists persists.
Yes. Ah, sweet.
Thank you. Have a great day.
See ya. Hey there. Are you rad as fuck and have a couple of extra bucks in your pocket burning a hole that you would love to give to a fellow rad as fuck human being who's creating an incredible shit hot podcast called Carlosophies? Well, my friend, you are in luck. What will you get for the few bucks burning a hole in your pocket right now that you would generously throw towards me? Head to the website patreon.com/Carlosophies and you'll see there's a stack of rewards and extra behind the scenes stuff that nobody else gets. I would absolutely fucking love your support. So head to patreon.com/Carlosophies and thanks for listening.